This is Iconic.
Welcome to Iconic, where we talk about all things 13th Age. I'm your host, JM, and with me as always are Nick and Becca.
Hey.
Hello.
We have a great interview for you this week. We are talking with Wade Rocket. Wade, welcome back to the show. We haven't had you on, I think, since season one.
It's been years and years. So, thank you for inviting me back. It's a pleasure.
Excellent. Well, we're just going to get right into our topics today. Becca, if you want to start us off.
Yeah. So, Wade, it's lovely to meet you. I was just going to ask you, what type of games do you enjoy?
On a very highest of high level, I enjoy role-playing games, which is a big distinction for me because I am housemates with a couple of my best friends, and they are board and card game fiends. So I have many, many opportunities to play board and card games. And while they're enjoyable, it's not really something that I get very excited about. Learning new rules. And I mean, I've given this a lot of thought because I tend to overthink a lot of things. And with board and card games, it's all about learning the rules and playing them as well as you can in order to achieve the victory condition, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
Whether it's to be the winner of the game or in something like Pandemic to collaborate to achieve a shared goal. With role-playing games, I can learn enough rules to bring a character or a setting to life in an entertaining way. And then if I need to go deeper, I can. So yesterday, I had to look up the death and dying rules in 13th Age because one of the PCs was reduced to negative hit points equal to half their maximum hit points.
Yeah.
I'm like, I think you're dead. But I honestly don't know because I've never done that before. So one moment, please. I mean, I like the self-expression and I like the collaborative nature of the world building and the drama that can happen, the emotional tension that can happen by that collaborative storytelling. So yeah, beyond that, in terms of the types of role-playing games, it's just, I'm really kind of across the board. As an older person with a day job and a freelancer, like really rules heavy, you know, big, big, thick books, I just don't have the interest or time or patience for anymore that I did when I was, you know, 14.
That makes sense. Now, speaking of your game from yesterday, I saw a tweet.
Oh, God.
So do you just have a Nicolas Cage mask at your table? Or was this something, was this a special occasion?
I'm going to answer that question in two parts. I already had a Nicolas Cage mask. for reasons, because someone had last Christmas, someone had given it to somebody that I follow on Twitter, that and a John Travolta mask. And I said, I really want a Nicolas Cage mask, just because. And then it occurred to me that it would be fun to bring that to the table and look for an opportunity to use it. The last couple of sessions we've had have been very intense and kind of serious. And so I wanted this session to be fun and goofy. And so I slipped in things like, okay, you have rolled a fumble. So I'm going to give you a choice. Either you can leave it up to me to decide what the penalty is for fumbling, or you can wear the Nicolas Cage mask until the end of your next turn. Nice. And so he chose the Nicolas Cage mask and I immediately regretted it because you're just looking into the dead eyes of a cardboard Nicolas Cage while you're trying to GM a game. And I was deeply unsettled.
Well, I feel like that you have encapsulated all of Nick Cage's career in that recap. Super serious, slapstick, the face that comes off. I feel like the whole oeuvre of Nick Cage movies is just encompassed in that story.
There's a film school essay in there somewhere.
There is, definitely. Or a Community episode.
That is my Nicolas Cage impression is Abed doing Nicolas Cage. So yeah,
you get that. Perfect.
So in the midst of all this hijinks and balancing what the board and card games that your roommates want to play and the role-playing games that you want to play, what is actually being played at your table right now?
I have been running a lot of Knights Black Agents one-shots for people. I ran the Van Helsing letter for my family in Georgia at Christmas when I went to visit them. or Thanksgiving, sorry. And I've run that at conventions because that's, so when you're running something for people who don't necessarily get to play RPGs often or have never played RPGs, there are a couple of paths, right? There's, okay, they've heard of D&D and are and would be interested in that. And that would give them their role-playing experience. Oh yeah, I've played D&D or at least something very much like D&D. Then there's people where you think, okay, a better introduction might be something that has tropes that they're very familiar with, like spy movies. And so I will go with something like Knights Black Agents. Like if you say, oh yeah, you play spies fighting vampires, you instantly get what this game is going to be like. And if that's your jam, then you're excited about it. Trail of Cthulhu, you know, drama system sometimes, even though I deploy that rarely because not everybody is up for emotional drama at the table. So yeah, Knights Black Agents, Trail of Cthulhu drama system, but the only ongoing campaign I'm running is 13th Age. I've been running it since the playtest of 13th Age. Also, I'm in a Star Wars Edge of the Empire campaign as a player.
So overall, do you end up GMing or playing more often?
Oh, God, I GM all the time. In fact, oh, gosh, I forgot. Stephanie Bryant, who is a wonderful game designer and GM, is actually running a short mini campaign for me of drama system because I said that I had never gotten a chance to play drama system. I've only run it. And so we're running that on Roll20 because Roll20 is her day job.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Do you have a preference between GMing or playing?
As a player, it's tough because I'm so used to GMing that when I become a player, it's a little bit jarring, right? So, for example, when I was at Strategicon, I played a game of Spirit of 77, and it was great. At the same time, I missed, as a GM, you know, you always have something to do as a GM. You are nonstop gaming, whereas as a player, I took my turn and then we kind of went around the table and I had to sort of wait for everybody else to do their thing and then come back to me. And there's some relaxation to that, but also kind of, I want to do something.
Yeah.
I want to at least have an opportunity to jump in and take an action, but I kind of have to let everybody else take the spotlight and let the GM kind of manage things instead of me. So I'm really enjoying playing in the Star Wars game, but I think overall I prefer GMing.
JM's shaking his head in agreement, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So one quick thing about Knights Black Agents. When you run Knights Black Agents, where do you set that spy dial to? Is it more Bourne? Is it more Le Carre?
More Bourne.
More Bourne?
Okay. Yeah, I am very much into the action thriller, Bourne Identity, Mission Impossible sort of thing. For one shots, if I were doing a campaign or even a mini campaign, it would be really interesting to try a Le Carre sort of scenario where things are sort of low key. There's a lot of legwork, maybe a lot of mistrust around the table. But I'm not sure if the people that I play with would get as excited about that tone as I would.
Yeah, that's my problem as well. I keep looking at Knights Black Agents and wanting to run something smiley or something Queen and Country with it. And most of the people who I would make that group for live in another state. So
that is always a challenge. I mean, I'm fortunate in that my group has said that they will play anything I choose to run, which is exceedingly rare for GMs, is from what I'm hearing. But also I know them and it's like, yeah, I don't think like Spirit of 77, I think is a blast. I'm not sure if people much younger than me are going to have as much fun with it as I will, because it is set in the 70s and is basically just a bunch of jokes about the 70s.
Those are always fun.
Yeah. But if you're not familiar with, say, the TV series BJ and the Bear, it's like the trucker with a monkey isn't going to resonate as much.
That's fair. So now we reviewed this adventure back in season 1, episode 15. I've run it number of times. So what can you tell us about the Wreck of Volan's Glory? And for those 13th Age listeners to Iconic who may not be familiar with it, what was the story behind putting together this adventure?
So Wreck of Volan's Glory began actually because I volunteered to run a gaming slot for Kobold Press at Gen Con. And I wanted to run Old School Hack, which is a very fun RPG, especially for one-shots. And so I came up with a scenario. One of the pre-generated characters and classes is Goblin. And so it's like, okay, this is going to be something with goblins in it. And that was kind of where I started. And I've been thinking a lot about the Wasted West, which is one of the regions of Midgard, which is a magic blasted wasteland, and where there's just weird storms and mutants and titanic alien horrors frozen in time looming over the landscape. And just about anything could happen, and there's a lot of opportunities to surprise people with something that they haven't seen before. I have a pendulum in terms of what I like to run, which are interesting takes on things everybody knows and also stuff that's completely out of left field. So what this turned into was sort of a Western flavored adventure where a group of adventurers needs to reach a crashed dwarven airship carrying some sort of magical artifact, you know, the MacGuffin. And there are other groups competing to reach that same goal, which is another idea that I like a lot, that you are on an adventure, but there are other groups of adventurers that you are up against, mm-hmm. and you're kind of racing against them and against the clock to get there, which I attribute to seeing It's a Mad, 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 Mad World as a child, which is a very entertaining movie. So yeah, so that was the start of it. And I ran that at Gen Con, and it was a tremendous success as an adventure. You know, you start in this sleepy town, then you descend into this this canyon, and you encounter a goblin tribe, and you encounter the other adventuring parties that are competing with you, and defeat or outwit them, and then fight the final guardians. And there's a lot of opportunities to do cool things with terrain. You're fighting in a village, you are fighting in a town, you're fighting in a canyon, you are fighting in the burnt out structure of an airship above a deadly fog. I mean, that lots of cool set pieces. So I ran that, and then I got into 13th Age, and I said, I would very much like to turn this into a 13th Age adventure. Ran that at a couple of conventions, worked out the kinks, and then went to Wolfgang and I said, I've been running this convention adventure for you, and I think it's publishable. Take a look. And that was that. So that became the first the first third party 13th Age adventure. So the structure is still there, but I was able to take advantage of the collaborative storytelling elements of 13th Age to determine who your foes are, because they're tied to icons, and what the treasure is that you are aiming for at the end. And because it's 13th Age, there is a wild variation of what that adventure will look like and then what the outcome is.
I think that's one of the things that impresses me the most about Wreck of Volan's Glory is just how deep that well is. I mean, you can keep going back to it again and again and again and run it, you know, many, many times, and it ends up being a different story, a different adventure each time, not only because of the player choices, like their backgrounds, when you things, but just the variances in that you put inside of the story itself. It's a really well done product.
Yeah. I also really like that you give a number of different little GM advice on, hey, if you have this much time, do this. If you have this much time, add these pieces back in. For running at convention games, that is just super useful. The only other time I've seen that is like in Chaosium products, where they're like, hey, for this con scenario, it's supposed to run 2 hours. So right around this point, this is when you should be moving into this section of the game.
I mean, it was my first published adventure, and I feel very fortunate that it emerged from convention play, because that made me very conscious of, okay, I want you all to have fun, but how much time do you have? Mm-hmm. And you're trying to squeeze it in there. What can I do to the GM to help them do that successfully? And that's something that, I think that I did it for Temple of the Sun Cabal as well, if memory serves.
One of the things that's been announced that you're working on right now is Crown of Axis, which is another adventure that's coming out. Are you going to kind of leverage some of those same formatting options from Wreck of Olin's Glory into this as well? Or what can you tell us about it?
So Crown of Axis is something that came about as the reverse of how Wreck of Olin's Glory happened. And actually, a lot of my stuff, like Temple of the Sun Cabal, came out of a 13th Age adventure design seminar at Gen Con, where we brainstormed an adventure with the audience. And then I went away and wrote it up and pitched it to Rob as something to publish. So this is the first time that somebody has come to me and said, we would like you to write an adventure and here's what we need. And then I went away and came back with a pitch for that. And that impetus was that the first level introductory adventures that we have for 13th Age have been around for a long time. And so it would be nice to have a new introductory adventure that will take you from first to second level. I came back with the pitch that I knew was something I was going to have to argue hard for because it seemed so unusual, which is that I wanted to set the adventure in the capital imperial city of Axis. A whole lot of first level adventures start someplace way smaller, a village, a town, a keep on the borderlands, someplace remote and small and manageable. And I wanted to put the first level characters into someplace completely unmanageable. Because, and this is 100% from Fafhrd and Gray Mouser, but also, well, okay, so that would be more than 100%, but also 10% from being a teenager in the 80s and playing first edition D&D with City State of the Invincible Overlord. Mm-hmm. So you have this massive city that is exhaustively detailed. Spoiler, my Axis is not exhaustively detailed, but and there was that feeling of excitement and wonder. It's like, we are adventurers at the beginning of our career. We're seeking fame and fortune. So yes, of course we are going to the biggest, most bustling place in the world where there's opportunities for people who are quick-witted and good with a sword and a spell, you know, and maybe we can find some work here. That seemed completely reasonable to me. And also lets you play with things like political intrigue and crime and law and order and governance. So yeah, and also the fact that it's Axis means that there's going to be representatives of most of the icons there for one reason or another, whether it's diplomacy or skullduggery. So that gives you kind of free rein to make it your own. When hearing this, Rob said, that's a great idea. Let's see if you can manage to keep it in 44 pages.
How'd you do?
Point taken, Rob Hainso. This is a big idea. And so I'm going to, ironically, have to keep it manageable. So it is going to be an adventure in Axis. It's not going to be the massive dog choking 13th Age source book for Axis. Thankfully, because 13th Age is very much, you know, make your own dragon empire, I can leave a lot of things open with just some suggestions for how you can expand, and then GMs can run with that.
Seems like a really good fit for 13th Age, you know, not only with the fact that when characters are starting out at level one, this is not the beginning of their career. They're already established, you know, they've done stuff that has gotten to the point where they're already heroes. So it does kind of make sense that they would start out in a bustling place like that. But then also, you know, like you were describing the framework maybe for Axis, but without going into a whole lot of detail, leaving it open-ended for the GMs and the players to kind of create their campaign world around that.
Yeah. I mean, for all I know, one of the characters in the party that's going to be playing this adventure will have a, you know, 5-point background, disgraced member of the Imperial Court. Ooh. Which really changes the game, right?
Right.
You know, you're not an outsider, you're an insider navigating this adventure, and that could do some really interesting things. But as a game designer, of course, I have to be able to be, you know, remind myself of all the different possibilities that could come up at the table and equip the GM to be able to handle those.
In Rob's blog post that he posted not that long ago, he mentioned that this was going to be a PDF only product. What was the decision behind not making this a printed product?
To be honest, I'm not completely sure. PDF only products are things that we have discussed at Pelgrane in the past, and they haven't been super enthusiastic about it. We did it with 13th Age Monthly as kind of an experiment. And then there was also a Ken Writes About Stuff, which was a wonderful PDF only series. But in terms of just standalone products, they're more keen to do print books. So I think this is a bit of an experiment to get a new first level adventure out there, sell it as PDF, and just kind of see how it does.
Awesome. Well, so, I can't wait to see it.
Me either. I love the cover art. Did you see my tweet about it?
I did see your tweet about it, and the cover art looks amazing.
Yes, the cover art is amazing, and there's a little professional wrestling Easter egg in it.
Yes,
which is also true of an illustration that I did the art direct or the art request for the 13th Age of Bestiary 2. The Hellmarsh cultists are based on a wrestling team.
Interesting.
Yeah. I keep waiting for someone to like email me and say, is that? Yep, that's them.
So at the beginning of this season, those of us here at Iconic discussed what we like about 13th Age. What about you? What is it about 13th Age that has kept you there for so long?
That's an interesting question, because this is the longest I've run a campaign of a single game.
Yeah.
And what keeps me there is that, okay, so 13th Age is the first RPG that I've ever designed monsters for. And this is not professionally. This is just as a GM, I would look at the monster entries and I would be planning my adventure and I would say, you know, this sounds good, but actually I'd like to tweak it to do this and this. And there's also a monster that I'd like to have in there that isn't in the book, but if I use the DIY monster charts and borrow some abilities from other monsters, then I could come up with something really cool. And so I sort of found myself operating on another level as a game master than I ever had before. And it was not so, like, in high school, my passion was Champions, right? The hero system.
Yes.
And making a villain would take me all night, because it is extremely crunchy and you build everything out of raw math. And, you know, and God bless it. I still love it to this day. But that's a lot of work. Whereas this is a reasonable amount of work to do that. So I love that 13th Age gives me the tools and inspiration to just run with it in lots of different directions, and also involve my players actively. When I started my campaign, they were still sort of traditional, passive isn't quite the right word, but you know what I mean? They were the players and I was the game master, and I was going to present the world to them and they were going to respond to that by, you know, picking locks and stabbing things and journeying to this village or whatever. And gradually over time, as we became more comfortable with the rules and more comfortable as a gaming group, I started putting more and more of the storytelling on them using 13th Age mechanic, built-in mechanics, right? This is something that you can do with any game, but it's baked into 13th Age in a really elegant and exciting way. And so that has resulted in continually excellent and surprising moments at the table where someone will spend an icon advantage to just really change the game or take the adventure in an unexpected direction. So it is still capable of entertaining and surprising after, you know, 7 years, and we still want more. There's always that feeling like there's more to do here. There's more to discover and more things we could do with this game that we haven't yet stumbled on. And I love that kind of discovery.
Yeah. That's a fun one. I agree with the whole story aspect is what really draws people in.
Yeah. Yeah. That's when people get, when I would work at a booth at a convention and would tell people, that's kind of when people would light up, is when you get into that collaborative story aspect.
Mm-hmm. And on the topic of always wanting more, other than Crown of Axis, do you have any other future products in the works for 13th Age?
There is a group of monsters that I wrote up, and I put them on the Pelgrane blog for the 13th Sage column, and they are Soldiers of the Wizard King. And those were things that I came up with for my game, and I sent them to Rob, and I said, you know, if this is of interest for a future product or just for your own amusement, you know, I've attached these Wizard King themed monsters. And he said, these might work for a future book. And so I suspect that he's going to be coming back to me with questions and very pointed questions about the design and about my intentions, because they are going to be in a future book.
Well, if for nothing else, we'll definitely link to him in the show notes.
Yeah. So
all of our listeners at least will be aware of it.
Now, you made another monster. Did that come out?
Are you referring to the overseer of the Eye Mother?
I'm referring to the overseer of the Eye Mother. Becca was involved in one of the playtests I did for you.
Oh, yeah. On that. That's something that I have always wanted to do. So I believe your listeners may be familiar with a monster called the Beholder. I'm not sure. I mean, it's an obscure little monster. Not many people have heard of it.
That's right.
It's unique.
Yeah.
Yes. And that is Wizards of the Coast IP. So it cannot be used under the Open Game License and other products. So when you have a D20 rolling fantasy game, kind of one of the things that people always want to do is, what would a beholder look like here? And so over the years, I've kind of been tinkering with it in my figurative garage. Like, how would I do that using these rules in order to make it to take advantage of the 13th age mechanics in a cool way? And so yeah, I statted up the Overseer of the Eye Mother, which is one of the Femori from, I believe, the Bestiary 2. Mm-hmm. And it is a squishy glob with eyes rotating around it and shooting all sorts of weird rays at the PCs whenever they breathe.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I remember that.
Yep. That's been toned down slightly.
Oh, good.
for the published version. It's a brutal, brutal monster. And honestly, when I play tested it, it was a TPK. Mm-hmm. So yes, that was an interesting experience, but I think it's a fun monster, and maybe it's one that you want to run away from at some point and kind of regroup and rethink it. But I think it came out pretty well. And it was a fun way to take a very old school monster and kind of bring it into 13th age and the 21st century.
Going back to Wreck of Volan's Glory.
Yes.
Is there any more 13th age Midgard conversions or products on the horizon? Cause I really enjoy the Midgard setting, and obviously converting it yourself is not that difficult to do, especially with the new books that Kobold Press has been putting out. But is there any plan to do a 13th Age Heroes book or anything like that?
Or maybe a Bestiary 2 or something?
Not at the moment. Wolfgang likes 13th Age a lot and likes what he's done with it, what we've done with it. But honestly, the demand is really for 5e. That's what Kobold customers want. And so that's what they're going to focus on. And we'll see what happens when with Pathfinder 2 as well. However, at the moment, I have just sent in the first installment of a series for the Kobold Press blog. I am updating the Midgard icons. So in the first Midgard Bestiary for 13th Age, I did write-ups of 13 Midgard icons. And now a new world book has come out, a Midgard world book that's compatible with 5th edition. And it updates the setting about 10 years, I think, 7 or 10 years. And so a lot's changed in the world. And some who were once icons have been cast down. And there are new players on the chessboard who are really changing things up. And so, yeah, I'm redoing those. Some have, so there's some icons who are gone. There's some icons like the Hidden Princess who has emerged to claim the throne of the elves, who's a new icon. And Wolfgang also suggested an icon called Queen of the Road, who will kind of be an icon for travelers and merchants and vagabonds and maybe rogues. And he didn't give me any other direction. So that's I've come up with my own take on that. The first blog post, I'm not sure when it's going to go live, but it will have the short overview of all 13 icons. And then maybe every couple of weeks, there will be a new blog post with one or two of the icons with full write-ups. So that's the next thing coming out for Kobold Press that's 13th Age related. And I think that if somebody pitched the right project to Wolfgang for 13th Age, that he might be interested in doing another product. but right now that's not what their focus is.
That's fair.
Yeah.
But even still, just a series of blog posts on new icons and takes on how you could use icons. It's always appreciated.
Yeah, definitely. And that's a mechanic that can be ported to so many games to good effect, even in a modern day setting. If you have a game where you are, you know, kind of X-Files like secret government operatives, maybe various government agencies could be icons that you have relationships with and you mm-hmm. could draw upon, like, you know, maybe you're connected to Majestic 12 with a, you know, 2 points of conflicted relationship with them.
Well, Wade, thank you so much for coming on the show. Any final questions or thoughts?
No, but we appreciate your time.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I appreciate the invitation so much. It is a privilege to be here. Thank you.
Well, we will talk with you again soon, hopefully next season, not let several years pass in between interviews.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right. Excellent, Wade. Thank you, sir. And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so by becoming a patron at patreon.com/iconicpodcast.
Well, you've been listening to the Iconic Podcast.
If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, you can contact us at iconicpodcast@gmail.com or call and leave a voicemail at 720-924-1706.
And be sure to check out iconicpodcast.com for news, updates, and new episodes.
Thanks for listening.